April 27th in the year of 91, about a mile below the surface and the warm Kentucky sun.
Our next guest on Downtown has played a number of iconic roles through the years, from Lenny Kozlowski and Laverne and Shirley, David St. Hubbins, and This Is Spinal Tap. Oscar nominee, along with his talented wife, Annette O'Toole, a Grammy Award winner, and an Emmy nominee for his wonderful performance as Chuck McGill in Better Call Saul. We are so pleased to be joined this afternoon by actor, writer, musician, Michael McKean. Michael, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rich, and happy anniversary. What's the appropriate gift for 2,000 shows?
I believe it's wood, but I'm not sure. No, I don't.
Okay, well, then I got wood for you. Go on.
I'm not sure how to take that. By the way, I'm very jealous of you because I saw the other night you got to see Elvis Costello and Debbie Harry in concert. That looked amazing.
Yep. Well, it was the second time I'd seen Blondie. The first time was exactly 40 years ago at the same venue at the Greek.
Wow.
Elvis, I've seen 1,000 times, and he's just, I think, you know, just such a major artist and such a major dude. It's he's just greater and greater all the time.
Well,
yep, very happy.
You have done so many things that we're just huge fans of through the years. We can't cover them all, but I want to go back to the very beginning and see if I have this right. Is it true that you saw with your dad the British actor Stanley Holloway on stage, and that's what inspired you to go into this profession?
That is very, very true. I remember the moment thinking that what a great job this is. I mean, he gets up there, he's having the time of his life. He's making all these other people happy and they pay him. So I thought, yeah, that looks like I knew that such an occupation existed, I suppose, but this was just kind of being there. It was my first Broadway show, really. I'd seen a few musicals in the sticks, but this was my first big show, and it was such a lovely show, and I loved all those music hall songs. So I thought maybe I'd give that a shot. And so now it's about 60-something years later, and I'm still wondering if it was a good idea, but here I am.
And your parents wanted you to have a plan B, and you had a rock-solid one, right?
Sure. I can also play the guitar a little bit.
What could go wrong?
That did lead, yes. I mean, it was like, the sex might lead to dancing kind of thing. You know, performing led to wanting to learn the guitar, which led to songwriting, none of which you can cash in at a window. Fortunately, I've always done exactly what I wanted to do and what I love. And I think I got a huge break there, and it's been a very nice life so far.
And speaking of music, people may not know, you were, I guess with an asterisk, you were part of a really talented 60s band that had a couple of big hits before you arrived. Can you talk about your time with Left Banc?
Well, I'm kind of a numbered footnote to an asterisk, really. What happened was the band made this single, Walk Away Renee. Nothing happened. They had a flip side that got a little play. No, not much. Of course, this is in the late 60s. This was actually the middle 60s. And the charts were just a different thing then. But the band broke up. They went their separate ways. Everybody had a big fight. I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't there. But then the record started happening, and it became an actual hit. Got to like number three somewhere. And so they put a band together again. And their original drummer was a friend of mine. He says, come on and play the guitar. So I rehearsed with them for 3 months. And we got ready to get out there on the road, and then the band broke up again because the keyboard player and his father, who was also our manager, had a huge fight. And it's just, it was one of those internecine things that had something to do with anything else. But I grabbed my guitar and my pretty suits, and I hit the road and went back to school. That's the whole story.
School was Carnegie Mellon, or as my wife's uncle, who went there as well, calls it Carnegie, which is correct.
Well, at the time, it was Carnegie Tech. Mm. It was before the Mellon money, yeah. And but actually, this was I went back to school. I went back to NYU for a couple of years.
Right, right. Now it was at Carnegie that you met up with David Lander, became friends, and it was actually there that you developed the characters of Lenny and Squiggy.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. David and I met while painting a chair. They made all the freshman acting students do crew work. So we were painting a chair together, and this strange little man, also an 18-year-old person like me, and we just had a great rapport. His favorite Broadway show of all time was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, one of the co-stars of which was a guy named Rudy Valley, and my father had written ghostwritten his autobiography, so we had a lot to talk about. And he just turned out to be one of those guys. You know, you meet him occasionally, meet people occasionally that you go, well, we were sort of made for each other, weren't we? You know? And when those things happen, you got to listen because someone's sending the messages.
Yeah, and he went to L.A. and then got in touch with you. And as a writer, he even said, I'm doing a little radio thing. You can do some of that. We can work together.
Right. The credibility gap, yeah. Mm. David, I remember David calling me up and telling me two things. Hey, McKean, I just got married. And I said, oh, congratulations. And also, you got to come out here because we're trying to find somebody to replace this guy we're trying to get rid of. the credibility gap was a satirical news program. Very funny. So I did that. I made a little money doing a children's record. And so I took that cash and I went out to L.A., and I figured I'd stay for a month or so, and I'm still here.
How did you meet up with Penny Marshall and Rob Reiner?
Well, they were friends of David. David had actually had appeared in a play directed by Rob Reiner, written by Phil Mishkin. And, you know, they knew each other. They were friends. I think they roomed together briefly. All those guys did. Yeah, I just, he and Rob and Penny, when they were early married, you know, we used to see them around at David's house or clubs when we would do a gig. They would come and see us. So, you know, Penny was somebody I just kind of knew peripherally. I knew her from TV. I thought she was brilliantly funny. And so the middle 70s, you know, 1975, 76, that's when we started working together. And you probably know the rest. You seem to know everything else.
We're talking with Michael McKean on Downtown. Well, she offered.
You remember my Hulu password?
I have.
As long as you know everything else about me, it's the one thing I can't.
I'm not going to say it on the air. I do know
okay.
It clearly.
Yeah, text me.
So she reached out to you and said, "We got a writing opportunity for you here, and maybe you can work in those two characters of yours and David's." And you did that with all deliberate speed, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we did with the very first episode, in fact. You know, they said, look, well, maybe you guys could be in the scene. So we went into the scene. So, well, can we write what we say? And they said, well, you're writers. Go ahead. And so we wrote a little bit of it, and it was fine. It was enough that it established the characters. It's funny, they're showing those now on Logo.
Right.
You know, and I happened to catch one the other day, and it's just so interesting because some of them I haven't seen in literally 40 years. So it's because you look at that stuff and you go, I remember exactly what went on every moment. And it's true. I have that kind of brain. Useless.
Well, of course, the show became an enormous hit on the air for several seasons. And then shortly after that, early 80s, Spinal Tap. And
right.
I have to think when you guys were working on this, could you have had any idea of the lasting impact? The fact that nearly four decades later, there are still generations of people who I'm sure approach you in airports and quote lines from the film.
Yes, but only in airports, strangely enough. No, that's not true. You're absolutely right. We just wanted to make it funny. And the only way we knew how to do it was by kind of keeping each, it was the four of us, by keeping ourselves honest about what makes each other laugh. Because we all got the joke, and we all knew what was extraneous to the joke, and we all knew what was spot on to the joke. The joke being the reality of this false thing that we're telling. And we just we kind of had each other. We kind of had each other. You know, if I knew if I made the other guys, like, if the scenes only work if we're all on the same page. And we just got real lucky and we worked real hard and we you know, we took a while, but we got it right. So,
is that sort of trust between the actors what makes ensemble work so well for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I've always been a team player as far as that goes. You know, I love being involved in stuff, no matter kind of what level I'm on. And I always have, because it's kind of a nice feeling. It's at its most distinct, I think, in a show. I've been doing a lot of theater in the last 20 years, and there's nothing like that. It really is like, well, this is it. They're your family now. Or they're like the small town you've moved to. Mm. You all know each other's business, and you all have this weird and amazing job to do 8 times a week. It's just, for me, it's still thrilling.
Yeah, you mentioned the stage work, and you've done so many wonderful plays, from Hairspray to Superior Donuts, Little Foxes, all the way with our friend Bryan Cranston. Also, I found this out doing a little research here. About 20 years ago, I did one of the strangest productions of Cymbeline ever, and I was directed by a woman named Kate Powers that I think you know.
Oh, absolutely. She's awesome. She's one of my heroes, really.
Yeah, and she brought you to Sing Sing, right?
She did, yes. Sing Sing did a production of Superior Donuts, which I had done on Broadway, and at Steppenwolf before that. And she said she was directing that, and she wanted to know if I wanted to meet the cast, and I said, of course. So I went up, had a very, very interesting evening there. And we've stayed in touch since then, and we've kind of, you know, we're pals, because I think we respect each other. And she's really one of those real heroic people that you've run into. Some of them are nurses. Some of them are theater directors.
Sure. The movies you've done with Christopher Guest and with Harry, they're so brilliant. A Mighty Wind, that had to be fulfilling on so many different levels. Winning the Grammy, of course, but getting the Oscar nomination, but getting it with your wife Annette. How cool was that?
It was very cool. It was something that just kind of came upon us. It was right after 9/11, and we were driving, because the planes were all grounded, we were driving back to Vancouver, where my wife was working on Smallville. So on this drive, we started writing songs, and they kept kind of, you know, Chris was already starting his work on Mighty Wind. And so they all seemed to be kind of gravitating toward that feel. So we started, we wrote two songs right off the top and wrote a couple more that were not used. You know, and wrote one more with C.J. Vanston, and I wrote with everybody else. But it was really kind of like, oh, okay, here we are early in our relationship. We've been married for 2 years at this point. And it's like, this, we have this too. And so it was very nice kind of, it was almost like getting a pat on the back for having good instincts. You know, there was no way I could know that she'd be really fun to write songs with, but here we are. So.
And then to have it be that beautiful moment in a uproariously funny movie, but a very poignant moment between Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, yeah, it's lovely. Chris made that song an actor in the show, and that was kind of like why I got some notice.
Let's talk about Better Call Saul, which is absolutely my favorite television show. We've had your castmate, Patrick Fabian, on the program. Had him also do his killer Jonathan Banks impression.
Yeah, it's pretty astounding, yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you, though, and this doesn't work for radio, the best Jonathan Banks impressions don't have any words.
Oh, you're right.
I have seen him shorten the life of a waiter from 20 yards. It's pretty astounding.
Well, we talked about ensembles and the group of actors that you have in Better Call Saul, and then couple that with the brilliant writing and direction. It just doesn't get any better.
No, it was a pot of jam I fell into, and I'm glad it worked out the way it did. Vince Gilligan, I've worked with Vince on X-Files, and every time he had something cooking, he would call me up. You know, and it was always like, oh shit, I'm in the middle. Excuse me. Sorry. I know. I didn't really say that.
No, we'll edit that out in post-production.
Okay. I'd say heck. Yeah. Anyway, it worked out this time, and I'm really glad it did. It, you know, I was doing All the Way with Brian, and Brian was kind of filling me in on, yeah, they're talking about stuff over there. Better Call Saul, it's going to be really good, and you should do this. And so I kind of felt I had a friend in court anyway, along with Vince.
Well,
and it turned out good.
Yeah, it sure did. And I've always felt like sometimes the best acting is done without a word of dialogue being spoken. And I think of the incredible, powerful work everybody did, but you in particular in the courtroom scene. My word.
Oh, thanks. Well, I had a lot to say in that one too. It was one of those things. It was the director called me up and said, "Oh, hi, I'm Dan Sackheim, and I'm going to direct." Good. He says, "Have you read the script yet?" I said, "No, not yet." A long sigh, and he said, "Okay, here's how I think we're going to have to do this," because it was one of those things where you want to get it all in one swallow if it's going to really, really work. So I said, "Look, you know, I'll work on it. I'll get it, no matter what it is." And it's a big scene, but it was really never not fun, mainly because of the company and the feel of the place. It was so, you know, by this time I'd loved everybody there, and they seemed to tolerate me. And you know, I had your Ray Seahorn on the set. I had the whole gang there. So it was pretty nice. And of course, Mr. Odenkirk. Not a bad guy to go to tell.
Yeah, he's okay too.
With.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Yeah.
And Chuck, obviously, when you play a character, you have to believe in what they're doing. And I know some people have said, well, he's not a sympathetic character. Well, but of course he is from your perspective. And I feel like his actions toward Jimmy are completely justified because of Jimmy's lack of ethics in the profession that Chuck loves so much. And even the allusion to the role that Chuck played in raising Jimmy. And I mean, that scene when he talks about the book that parents read, and you correct him and say, "You know, I read that book to you."
Yeah. Well, it's a very complicated relationship. All brothers are probably complicated. Yeah. I think you said it all.
Will we see, maybe you can't let the cat out of the bag either way, will we see more flashbacks with Chuck in the coming season?
The cat stays discreetly in the bag, I'm afraid.
I thought that would be the case.
Yeah.
Another work that you just had out was Good Omens on Amazon.
Yeah.
That was a great, and your role of Sergeant Shadwell was just great. I read a description that you gave of his accent as cranky old Scots speak, and in the book it's described as an intermediate, indeterminate regional accent that wandered around a bit. So what was that process for you to get Shadwell's accents to the point where you and Neil Gaiman wanted it to be for the show?
When he first approached me about the role, he says, "How's your Scottish accent?" I said, "Well, I'll give it a shot." And he said, "Actually, this is," and I had read the book, and he said, "Do you remember anything about?" And I didn't remember Shadwell's accent thing, but he said in the book it was, he goes all over the British Isles. He's just a wanderer. He says, "Well, I don't think we can do this because it just looks like the actor's looking around for the accent. There's no, in other words, there's no narrator in the, you know, who would point this out. You would just, it would be in the dialogue," but he decided not to do that. It's just like a real general kind of, you know, work on a Scottish accent and we'll go from there. So I had a lot of Scottish people on the set, of course, Doug McKinnon and David Tennant. And I would ask them for, you know, help and edification. And, you know, and Doug had a tendency to go, "Don't worry about it. You know, you're this Shadwell's from everywhere. Don't try and nail it down." And, you know, you can't really do that. I, when I was a kid, if I wanted to do an Irish accent, I'd just pretend that I was Barry Fitzgerald. I'd just do a Barry Fitzgerald accent. And I could have done, there's a guy, a very funny Scottish comic named Frankie Boyle. And I listened to a lot of him, and I could just do Frankie Boyle, but it would have been 100% wrong for the character.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to, you know, stay honest to who I thought he was, you know, the accent is a mess, but hey, we got through it. We all survived. That's what matters.
We're talking with Michael McKean. Have to ask you about Celebrity Jeopardy that you won. What was the biggest challenge or the toughest part of that whole scenario?
Well, one very tough thing took care of itself when Andy Richter took himself out of the contest to go on the road with Conan.
Right.
Nobody would have beaten him. I wouldn't have had a shot with him at all. And the other one was on the day was actually Jane Curtin and Cheech Marin were both monsters, really fast on the buzzer and really smart. And it was only through a fluke that I had made enough the previous day, and Cheech beat me the second game, but still I hadn't, you added the two together and I came out the winner. But it was really fun and really. You had to concentrate.
I love a Food Fact or Fiction. Will there be a fourth season of that?
There has been a fourth season.
Well, there was. Was that the fourth?
Yeah, that was the fourth. And I think we're still kind of waiting to hear. They might have enough. You know, it's very popular, apparently. People like to watch them over and over again, which I think is great. It's on the Cooking Channel, but I think some of the reruns are also on the Food Channel. If you just flail around, you can find Food Fact or Fiction. It's really fun. And you can actually learn stuff that's almost useless, but, you pull it out at a cocktail party and you get a free drink.
Right, no knowledge.
Or sure at a party anyway.
No such thing as useless knowledge. I understand you've got some projects in the can. Anything you can share with us?
Yeah, I'm in the next season of Grace and Frankie. I did a stretch there. There is a show called Breeders, which I shot in the UK with Martin Freeman and the great Daisy Haggard. And those are upcoming. That's going to be on FX here. Yeah. I did a little film with my friend Kelly Oxford, which could be really, really good. And I'm going to take a little break now. And I might have something going in November, but I'm going to go hang with my wife. She's shooting a show up in Vancouver pretty soon. And so I'm going to go be her fancy man.
Oh, very nice. Oh, well, I meant to mention, too, loved your appearance on The Good Place. We've had Will Jackson Harper on the show a couple times. That was great.
I did All the Way with Will Harper.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. He's my hero, man. He's great. And just all my girlfriends and my wife and my daughters all said, after they saw All the Way, they said, "Oh, that was great. This is good. Brian was great. Who's that guy?" Yeah, he's cute, isn't he? But he's an amazing actor. He's got great range, and I think it's nice that people know who he is.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, it's a real treat for us. We've been fans of your work for so long. Thank you so much for making time for us, and we wish you and Annette continued success and good health.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate it. And have a great congratulations again on number 2,000, and do a couple thousand more, and then call me back.
I'll do it again. Thank you so much, Michael.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rich. Bye-bye.
That's Michael McKean here on Downtown. 25 minutes to go before 5 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. Rich Kimble here, Carrie Haskell, Ryan Wehning. That was kind of fun, huh?
That was a little bananas. I kept flashing into different characters, listening to his different characters pop up in real conversation. Thought that was fun. But the ether dream that is him playing Jeopardy with Jane Curtin and Cheech Marin, that's going to pop up in one of my dreams at some point. I'm not going to know the reference for it, but thanks, Rich Kimble.
Yeah, that was awesome.